Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be taking a deep dive into a company, Microsalt. It is a low sodium technology company which developed a salt which can reduce the sodium in salt by as much as 50%. And to discuss the company and their future prospects, as well as the wider problem and the health problems we're seeing with the overconsumption of salt, we're very kindly joined by non-executive chair of Microsalt, Judith Batchelor, OBE. Judith, thank you very much for being with us today.
Not at all. A pleasure to be here. Thank you.
So, Judith, we're going to be discussing in some detail the regulatory environment. We're going to be looking at the health implications of the overconsumption of salt, as well as where Microsalt fits into this picture. But before we do that, Judith, would you be able to give us, please, an introduction to yourself and a little bit about Microsalt, please?
Yeah. So I've spent most of my life in the food and drink industry, probably 40 years in food manufacturing, agriculture and retailing. But actually, I started my life off as a biochemist, and my first job was working for a pharmaceutical company. And that's when I got interested in nutrition. And that has been a constant theme throughout my whole career. And because salt has been, I suppose, on the public health radar since the 1990s, it's always been there as part of the role that I've done within the food industry. So I've seen, you know, over very, very many years, many attempts to lower salt in the diet for all sorts of reasons. So when, in fact, funnily enough, I was working with Lord Willetts, David Willetts, when he was at the Department for Business and Innovation, and I chaired with him an agritech council. And basically, Microsalt was introduced to me because of him, because he had come across this business and he sent me an email and said, this looks like really interesting technology. And when I read what they were doing and read that basically they could produce salt, but in very, very, very small particles that gives you all of the hit of the flavor of salt, but with half the sodium, I was very excited. Having spent 30 years of my life trying to reduce salt in foods, this felt like a massive game changer. So when the opportunity came along to join Microsalt, I grabbed it with both hands.
It's very interesting, Judith, that you mentioned that salt and overconsumption of salt has been an issue since the 1990s. Why do you think it's a particular problem now, and what's the real need to address it now? You know, in terms of, if we were looking what's happening on a global basis in terms of the cardiovascular diseases, how's that progressed since the 1990s?
Yeah, look, it's a good question, actually, because in the early 1990s, not much was done about it. And the government in this country produced a report that made some very strong recommendations about reducing salt in the diet. And they weren't taken up for another 10 years. And it wasn't until 2001 when a chap called Professor Graham McGregor in this country really became the pioneer for acting on salt. And he was particularly interested in the link between salt and high blood pressure. But of course, high blood pressure leads to all sorts of other challenges. So the knock-on effects of having high blood pressure range far and wide, and therefore the cost to the National Health Service of a high salt diet is, you know, shouldn't be underestimated. So the business case for dealing with high salt diets became much, much more obvious, I think, to government. And at that point, they introduced the first salt targets for food manufacturers and retailers. So this is setting targets for the reduction of salt. And that went on for four rounds, actually. We're on the fifth round of salt reduction targets now. And that's this year, actually, and we're not going to hit it. But that progress in the first few years was pretty good, actually. And salt has come down in the diet, but not to anywhere where it needs to be. So, for example, the target in the UK is 6 grams of salt per day. And at the moment, the average is 8.4. And for men, it's even higher, over 9 grams a day average male is consuming. And for women, it's about 7.5 grams a day. So we are nowhere near hitting the target that we need to hit. And that's because basically, if you take too much salt out of foods, they don't taste quite as good. So consumers reject those products because they're not as tasty. And just the same way that foods that have sugar in them and fat in them taste tasty too. So we've got this challenge that we have compromised taste to the point that customers reject those products. And therefore, if you look from about 2015, 2016 onwards, the reduction of salt in foods really has hit a bit of a brick wall and we've kind of run out of road. And that's why this technology and microsalt as a product is such a game changer. The other thing is that if you look at that salt, most of that salt in people's diets comes from prepared foods that they've purchased, not from salt that they add at home when they're cooking or from salt that they add at the table. So there is a real opportunity from a business-to-business point of view to basically provide an ingredient that enables food manufacturers to reduce salt levels, as well as a retail offering, again, for customers who do use salt at home.
Thank you. So it seems there, Judith, from what you've said, that there's, of course, been action taken and target setting by the government, which haven't been met. And you know, in the industry, it sounds like there's maybe a bit of an unwillingness from taking previous low salt alternatives, you know, and pushing that through into their products due to the taste factor. So yes. What was it about micro salt in particular drove you to take up your position as non-executive chair?
Yeah, I think a couple of things, really. One is the fact that it does work and it does work quite universally, really, in all sorts of different products. So if you were to look at the government salt targets, they set those salt targets specifically by each individual food category. So there are 84, would you believe, 84 different categories of food, all of which have their own salt target. So things like meat products, and within meat products, you'd have things like bacon and sausages, breakfast cereals, all sorts of things. And what you'd sort of find is that microsalt works in most of those product categories and in different applications. So it works really well in bread because it's such a small particle. It distributes really evenly in mixes. So, for example, in bread, it also helps the proving time of the bread because it's distributed more evenly throughout the dough. On things like salty snacks, where it's basically applied topically on a crisp or a snack, because it's a tiny particle, it adheres to the product better than a larger particle of salt, and therefore you don't waste as much in the manufacturing process. And in other things, for example, prepared meals, it can work over the life of the product, so you don't lose that flavour over time. So it's got huge applications, and also, because it's basically salt and it's a very, very small particle of salt, it really is. It's not quite a like for like substitute, but with a lot of food ingredients that are looking to replace something else, then you end up adding more ingredients to compensate for the ingredient that you've taken out. Whereas when you're just replacing salt with microsalt, It's not quite as straightforward as that, but it is pretty straightforward. That is unusual for these kind of innovative ingredients. And I think for manufacturers, particularly manufacturers who are challenged by some of the new legislation, and I'm talking about things like the high fat, sugar and salt legislation, or FSS foods, as they're described, those brands have got a motivation to reduce their salt levels and their sugar and fat levels, because if they don't, they won't be able to promote and advertise those products in the way that they have historically. And some of that has already come into force. For example, what we describe as product placement, so where you can place these products within a supermarket environment, for example. But there's also things that you may have heard about, for example, the ban on advertising before the 9 p.m. watershed, the removal of those products from promotions that sit on the end of aisles and are those sort of hot spots for promoted products. So there's all sorts of motivations, and the market is driving that partly through regulation and partly through people being more aware of having a low salt diet. So all of those things come together do make for a perfect environment for the salt reduction agenda to take off again, and give that whole target setting and achieving those targets a new lease of life.
Yes, and that's a very good point I'd just like to pick up on, actually, Judith, because if you look at the HFSS foods, of course, sugar, as we all know, has really been in the targets of particularly the UK government over the last 10 years. Do you feel that salt's been neglected to some extent? And do you see that being bumped up the agenda by this government or maybe the next government, whoever comes in at the end of this year? Do you think that is going to be an area that you really see policy coming in and policy changes, particularly around salts?
Yeah, no, I think that whole HFSS agenda is not going to go away. And if anything, I suppose the interventions from government are going to be stronger. And I think you've already seen that from the opposition and some of the recent announcements that they've made, and particularly from a public health point of view, about where they'll be setting some of those targets. And I know there was when the sugar levy was brought in for soft drinks, and that caused a whole host of activity within the soft drinks industry to reduce sugar levels or pay the levy. I'm not sure there will be a salt levy, but certainly the kind of scrutiny that organisations were put under to make sure that they were doing that reformulation work where possible. There was huge scrutiny from government. The difference, I think, with salt is up until now, there hasn't really been an ingredient that could do the job of traditional salt in exactly the same way. So many of what would be termed salt replacers historically were things like potassium chloride rather than sodium chloride, but they have a different flavour and they behave differently. And that caused all sorts of things, again, around taste acceptance, and it just didn't work. So having something that literally is just salt but smaller version of it is going to be more acceptable and does give manufacturers, brand owners, retailers the opportunity to go again on this agenda. And I think that is going to be an important factor in this, whereas if you go back 2 or 3 years, people really had hit a brick wall on this. And I give you examples of where people had been very adventurous in terms of lowering salt, and for example, in breakfast cereals. And basically, they had to reformulate and add some of that salt back in because customers just rejected the products. So it's the timing is right, I think.
Fantastic. So it sounds like there, Judith, that in the past there has been a willingness from business to reduce salt, but ultimately the ingredients they had at their disposal at that point in time produced, maybe in their view, in consumers' views, an inferior product. So microsalt sounds like it does represent a step change in the alternatives that these manufacturers can use going forward. I mean, in terms of what companies have been doing, and you know, the companies that you're speaking to as microsalt, do you think there is a willingness across the board, you know, maybe not just in the HFSS, but across the board and in the food industry to reduce sodium? Or do you feel that we're going to need some form of action from the government? You said that obviously there won't be anything like a sugar levy, a salt levy. Mm. But do you think there's going to have to be some involvement from the government in terms of encouraging these businesses across the board to adopt low sodium options?
Yes, and I think some of that will be around investment in innovation. So if you look at the UK, for example, UK Research and Innovation, UKRI, has put money into the research councils to look at exactly these kinds of things. So there's a thing called the Open Innovation Research Club, which provides basically open innovation for all businesses to share and take part in. And one of those work streams as part of that Open Research Innovation Research Club is a work stream on reformulation. Because I think the government sees that it has to incentivize, help and provide research monies to help businesses push that agenda forward. So I think there are incentives. There is obviously regulation. And I think there's also just the sort of court of public opinion on this that says if you can do something about these things, then you should. And because we now have the mechanisms to do something about it, then why wouldn't you? And there's that lovely saying that, you know, if customers knew what we know, what would they expect us to do? And I think they would expect us to do something about it. So, it's the time is right.
Thank you very much, Judith. So just to finish off, and for listeners, to get your perspective on where you see the industry going, would you be able to give us some key milestones that you see on the horizon for the food industry in terms of sodium reduction and maybe where you see microsalt fitting into that journey?
Yeah, I think the first thing is this is a global issue. It's not a UK issue. And if you look at other countries, and I'm thinking particularly places like Mexico and South America, they have been much more ambitious with the targets that they've set for the food industry in those countries. So the reason we ended up with a sugar levy was the exemplar for reducing sugar consumption from soft drinks was actually Mexico. And Mexico led the world on that. And it is a case study that everybody mentions. And I think if you look at the South American countries and what they're trying to do, particularly as the growth of some of those big FMCG brands that are often high in fat, sugar and salt, they are encouraging business in all ways to deal with these agendas. And I say, whether it's salt, sugar or fat. I think the other thing is, I think next year or this year, in fact, there are going to be more general elections in the world than ever before. I think 40 countries, 70% of the world's population will have a new leader and a new leadership party this year. And a lot of those parties are, I suppose, focused on what we would call the sort of chronic lifestyle diseases, so things like cardiovascular disease globally. And if you add that to the fact that there are already literally I think over 80 countries that have already got salt targets at a national level, then this agenda is only going to grow. So I think watch this space from a global perspective as these parties come in on particularly on health of the nation type issues. I think when we get to the kind of end of this year and that we will have a new government of some description, then expect these things to be absolutely high on the agenda, because they are so fundamental to the prevention of ill health. And I also think a lot of the things that have been talked about from a food and diet point of view start at quite a young age. So I think there's going to be a much greater emphasis on the advertising of these kinds of products that are high in fat, sugar and salt to young people, and what that means for things like the rules and benchmarks for school meals, for example. And this is about making sure that, you know, when young people are developing their palates, they're not developing their palates in a way that enables them to enjoy high fat, sugar, salt foods, but that their palates are educated in a way that basically means that they don't ever get used to eating those products. So there are some quite big things coming down the track in that respect.
Yeah, that's a fascinating point that you make there, Judith, that if you ingrain into the younger generations that, you know, high fat, high sugar, high salt diets are not conducive to a healthy lifestyle and they get used to those flavours, that's a big hurdle to overcome and really sets up generations going forward for healthy eating. So as you said, I'm sure listeners to this podcast, Judith, will be watching this space with interest and seeing how micro salt develop over the coming years. And hopefully, as things progress, we'll welcome you back onto the podcast in the coming months to see how things are going then. So, Judith, thank you very much for being with us this evening.
No, well, thank you. And I shall look forward to coming back and talking more about it. But for now, that's probably enough, isn't it? Thank you.
That was fantastic. So, Judith, once more, thank you very much. And thank you very much to everyone for listening. Thank you.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember, all investment involves risk.